from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For a lot of people, families, the holidays from Thanksgiving time through the New Year mean a trip or two or three to the movies. Hollywood, with an eye on box office and the Oscars, is happy to oblige. This year's holiday crop is out or headed out right now. Jennifer Lawrence in The Hunger Games, Catching Fire. Leonardo DiCaprio as Wall Street hustler in The Wolf of Wall Street. And a cast full of 1970s hustlers in American Hustle. The Coen brothers are back with Inside Llewyn Davis this hour on Point. Top movie critics on this season's Hollywood Hall. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What movies are on your list? What are you looking for this season? What have you seen? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is A.O. Scott, Tony Scott, chief film critic for the New York Times. Tony Scott, A.O. Scott, welcome back to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Great to be with you, Tom.
And with us from Philadelphia is Carrie Rickey, longtime film critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. You can link to her blog at our website, onpointradio.org. Carrie Rickey, welcome back to you as well. Great to have you.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Tom. What's for holiday movies?
Yeah,
what's
we'll
on
see.
The table?
We'll see. Hey, we'll dive into big themes, but just give us some favorites right off the bat. What do you like, Carrie?
Well, I divide movies between forehead films, the movies that make you think, popcorn films that make you sit back and enjoy, and the Kleenex films that kind of make you emotional. So my three favorites are, my favorite forehead film is Spike Jonze's Her, his best film since Being John Malkovich. It's a rueful love story about a man who falls in love with, not quite Siri, but an operating system.
Something, yeah, OS.
Yeah, my favorite popcorn film has to be The Best Man Holiday. It's a sequel to the 1998 film, and it's about faith, friendship, fornication, and football. It's very American.
Okay.
And my favorite Kleenex film has to be Saving Mr. Banks. It's the story behind the story of Making Mary Poppins, and it stars Tom Hanks as Walt Disney and Emma Thompson as Poppins author P.L. Travers.
Saving, it's a Kleenex film, it's emotional? It's a weepy?
It's not necessarily weepy, but I cry. I cry at change, but it's very, very emotional.
Okay. Let's listen to just a little of one of those you mentioned there. Her, the Spike Jonze new film, comes out December 18th. And you've got Theodore, played by Joaquin Phoenix, and forms a close bond with his computer's operating system, Samantha. Not Siri, but Samantha here, voiced by Scarlett Johansson.
How long before you're ready to date?
What do you mean?
I saw in your emails that you'd gone through a breakup.
Well, you're kind of nosy.
So what was it like being married?
There's something that feels so good about sharing your life with somebody.
How do you share your life with somebody?
A.O. Scott, I still favor the corporeal when it comes to companions, but maybe that's old-fashioned. What'd you think of Her, A.O., and what's at the top of your list?
Well, I think Her is wonderful, not just for this very tender and sincere, if improbable, love story. I mean, that's played very, without irony and as a real genuine emotional experience for both of the characters.
How does that work? Well, without irony, is it AI is supposed to be so sophisticated here?
We're in this future, which is one of the best things about the movie is the way that it imagines a very plausible near future that's just sort of an extension of some of the stuff that's going on. Now, I mean, for one thing, the men all seem to wear very high-waisted pants, which is an unusual
and
striking fact. But the Joaquin Phoenix character, he has this job where he's a writer, which means he writes on his computer, and the computers have these beautiful wood frames. Everything is a kind of a mixture of the high-tech and the artisanal.
But a little steampunk.
Handwritten correspondences between various people, between parents and children, between lovers. So he's already involved in creating the virtual emotional lives of other people as his job, but he's a kind of a lonely, sad sack guy in this very weird, built-up Los Angeles. And he gets this new operating system, which has a very sexy voice of Scarlett Johansson, and they strike up this bond that is very sweet and seems a little strange, even to the people who live in this world, but very quickly becomes a kind of a natural and normal and wonderful thing. And then other stuff happens, which I don't want to spoil. But it's a very fresh and very touching vision of the future that extrapolates kind of from where we are now, living among all of these increasingly intelligent and increasingly present machines, and feeling bonded to them in these new ways, and maybe less bonded to each other than we should be or have been.
It's Scarlett Johansson.
A world where emotions and feelings are mediated by machines and other people, and it's very, very fascinating and touching.
Well, given all the time that we see, millions and millions and millions of ourselves spending on digital appliances these days, it seems entirely relevant. There's the future that may not seem too far from the present. Tony, I want more of yours, but let's just contrast it with something here from the past. This is a scene from Saving Mr. Banks, comes out December 13th. Walt Disney, played by Tom Hanks, greets P.L. Travers, the author in real life and in the film of Mary Poppins, played by Emma Thompson. He's expansive, she's buttoned up.
You know, I can't believe P.L. Travers right here in my office. After all these years, almost 20 of them?
Yes.
20 long years. I wish you could have seen me then, Pam. Lean as a whippet I was. A racehorse. Well, anyway. Now here you are, and look at you. Oh, I could just eat you up.
That wouldn't be appropriate.
Well, Emma Thompson. Love Emma Thompson, Carrie. What about this chemistry, Walt Disney and P.L. Travers here?
They are chalk and cheese, and it's an amazing story about Walt Disney really wants to make this movie with a very, very reluctant author, and she negotiates for like total control, and he's going wacky. And
why is she so reluctant? Because he's a crazy American?
Because
she's the Brit buttoned up on it?
This story means something to her, and Walt Disney actually has to do a great deal of deep empathy and think about what it was like when people wanted to buy Mickey Mouse from him and what all that represented.
Yeah.
And he has to become a psychoanalyst, which you never think Walt Disney could be.
No.
And Tony, tell me, do you think this story is going to work for people who haven't seen Mary Poppins, or who?
I was wondering that. I mean, there's also another story. There's sort of two parallel stories going on. There's the story of the making of Mary Poppins, which is very much based on what actually happened and based on tapes that Travers insisted on making while she was working with the Sherman brothers on the songs and with the screenwriter on the script. But then there's another story about her childhood in Australia, her father, who was a kind of a dreamer and a fantasist and also a terrible alcoholic. So you have these kind of point-by-point matching up and the exploration of the backstory, the kind of the idea, a very familiar idea in movies, that the sources of creativity or storytelling or of imagination lie in some childhood pain, and she has to...
And the transformation of that pain.
Can't we assume these days that everybody sort of who was once 6 years old, or most everybody, has seen Mary Poppins? I mean, do you assume that as critics that, you know, that the canon of whatever childhood films is seen at some point by just about everybody on their way through those years?
The Disney films are, because they're very good at remarketing them, which may be part of the reason that that this movie exists
to kind
of to bring a new generation. So you know, kids who haven't seen Mary Poppins maybe will go to this with their parents or their grandparents and then want to see the actual movie. But yeah, I don't know. You never know kind of what sort of attraction the pop culture of the past will have for kids today. I mean, they weren't very interested in The Lone Ranger last summer.
True. Just fell. Carrie, do you assume that your readers share a body of what they've seen with you?
I was wondering, because I have kids who are 28 and 17, and for them, Walt Disney is a theme park and a brand. He's not a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up watching, you know, The Wonderful World of Disney, and he was very real to me.
He would be on that little TV screen on Sunday night with a little mustache looking straight at you and talking.
So I was wondering, I think my kids like good storytelling, and I know they've both seen Mary Poppins. But I was wondering, it kind of presumes that you know a lot about the story.
Well, maybe it's a twofer then. Everybody runs out and gets Mary Poppins and sees that and then goes to the film, or the other way around.
I think that's part of the marketing plan.
Yeah.
I think it assumes maybe too, which is interesting, that you might have read the books as well as seen the movie, and you might have some awareness of the difference between them, which is kind of what the making of part of Saving Mr.
Good
Banks
point.
Is about, is how you take the story, which is one thing
yes.
on the page and
yes.
in the books, and turn it into something else. And I mean, a lot of kids. My kids, I think, have seen the movie, but I know they've read the book. So,
read the book. The bar rises higher and higher. Tony Scott, your kids are so, so well read there. Oh, I can't wait to go on down through your list. This is really terrific. A.O. Scott, Tony Scott from the New York Times, chief film critic there. Kerry Rickey, film critic at the Philadelphia Inquirer, are with us today. And we are looking at movies to see and maybe movies to flee this holiday Hollywood season. Frozen Heart music behind us here from the 3D animated Disney film opening tomorrow. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking about movies to see and movies maybe to flee this Hollywood holiday season with Kerry Rickey of the Philadelphia Inquirer and A.O. Scott, chief film critic for the New York Times. The Best Man Holiday new film, Kerry Rickey mentioned. I think it's on Tony Scott's list as well. It's in theaters now. Brian here, played by Eddie Cibrian, is white and visits his black girlfriend Jordan, played by Nia Long. Jordan was discussing a writing project with Harper, played by Taye Diggs, black. Harper takes a little while to catch on that the white guy who joins them is Jordan's boyfriend.
How are you? Brian McDonald.
Harper Stewart.
All right. Yeah, Harp, sure, Harp. Of course, the writer. Yeah. Jordan's told me all about you.
Oh, ha, who? Okay, good to meet you. You guys friends from work? You guys
no,
work together? Or?
Brian's my boyfriend.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, this Brian. Okay, because I thought you meant the one. No, right, Brian.
Okay, awkward, or maybe not supposed to be these days. Tony Scott, Kerry says faith, friendship, football. I think you like this one as well. What's going
on
here?
It's a terrific movie. It's just very, it's a sequel, what is it now?
Many 12, years
14
later.
Years. To the Best Man, which was part of a wave of African American romantic comedies in the late 90s and early 2000s, and I hope this means that there will be another wave. This movie is just very fresh and real and fun, and you can relate to the characters, and it's as you hear a little bit in the clip you just played, you know, it's a movie that is. You know, and can't help but be about race, but not in at all a sort of a heavy-handed or didactic or even a kind of cautious and careful way. It's just about you know, the reality of American life with a great deal of buoyancy and humor and warmth.
Kerry, there's talk of another wave or wavelet or something of African American films this season. Is it right to even think of it in those terms anymore? Is this just part of the flow, or is there a special genre?
There are three Christmas movies.
Black Nativity.
Black Nativity.
This is Langston
by Casey
Hughes' play.
Yes.
Part of the film, yeah.
And with updated music. There is Madea's Christmas film. I can't remember the title, forgive me, with Tyler Perry. And there is the Best Man Holiday, mm-hmm. which is... I think they're all, celebrating African American life and different parts of it for the holidays. And I think they want to do for movies what Miracle on 34th Street or It's a Wonderful Life or This Christmas previously have been for African-American moviegoers. Tony, I have a very, very important unanswered question.
Okay.
Much as I love Morris Chestnut, who stars in The Best Man Holiday, and much as I love Matthew McConaughey, who's in Dallas Buyers Club, is it in their contracts that they have to take off their shirts in the first 10 minutes of the movie?
Well, I think that's just a matter of you know,
give
popular
the people
demand.
What they want.
It's the phrase we want.
It's some law.
Yeah, law of physics.
I think it's probably it's probably a stipulation. But Tony, why not?
Why not, Tony? What else do you like? What else are you recommending this season?
I like. Well, we were talking about Saving Mr. Banks. My choice for a movie with music in it, set in the 1960s, is Inside Llewyn Davis, the new Coen Brothers movie, which I just saw again just last night, and it's all very fresh and vivid in my mind. It's my third time seeing it, and it's a story. It takes place in 1961 in the Greenwich Village folk scene. Pre-Bob Dylan, just like almost literally the week before Bob Dylan shows up and changes it all. And the lead character, the title character, is played by Oscar Isaacs, who's just a terrific actor who's had character parts in various movies, in Drive with Ryan Gosling and Sucker Punch, who can really sing and can really play the guitar. And he plays this very talented but very unlucky and irresponsible folk singer, and it follows him through a couple of days where he's just making one bad decision after another, and kind of everything is getting messed up, and very little happens. It's not there's not a lot of plot. A lot of it is him trying to wrangle the cat that has escaped from an apartment that he's crashing in. This beautiful orange tabby that he's chasing around Greenwich Village, and ends up going almost all the way to Chicago with. But the music is fantastic. The songs that are from the Dave Van Ronk repertory. Llewyn Davis is a little bit suggested by Dave Van Ronk. Mm-hmm. But as with the Coen Brothers, there's amazing period detail. There's a story that kind of zigs and zags. There's great comic moments, and I think a little unusually for them, there are some, thanks to the music and Isaac's performance, some just very heartfelt and moving moments that come up.
What's the point of the historic moment they've set it at? Just 2 seconds before Bob Dylan comes to town. What's the meaning in that? What are they showing us?
Well, it's partly that the folk scene then was this little coterie. You know, it hadn't quite yet been discovered by the broader popular culture. And so it was, you know, the people playing in these little cafes in what they call basket shows, where they pass the basket and put the money in it. And it's, you know, guys in turtleneck sweaters and women with flattened out hair. And everybody is, and this is a very pointed thing in a Coen Brothers movie. Everybody, except maybe Llewyn himself, is very sincere. The music is about sincerity and authenticity and the sounds of the people, and they play auto harps and they sing traditional ballads. And of course, you know, most of them
are... Is it a send-up of that sincerity, Tony? Gone with the Wind looking...
Not quite. I mean, a little bit of both. You know, with the Coens, they're always looking with a bit of a jaundiced eye at whoever they're looking at. But there's also great appreciation. Just for the artistry. I mean, the songs are terrific. There's an original song that was composed for the movie that Oscar Isaacs and Justin Timberlake, who plays one of his friends and rivals on the folk scene, perform. That's a kind of a novelty song about the space program called "Please, Mr. Kennedy, Don't Send Me into Outer Space," and it's a great song. It's just, I mean, it's a totally goofy song, and the recording session is this ridiculous scene, but. It's the movie's partly about the professionalism of these people. They know how to play their instruments. They know how to sing.
Yeah. Here's just a little bit from this is Oscar Isaac playing Llewyn Davis in Inside Llewyn Davis. He's asking a club manager in the early 60s, just before Bob Dylan comes to New York, for a chance to play.
Rain, she's a turning in day.
I'm interested in gigging here.
Okay, let's hear something.
You don't want to hear the record?
Why should I? You're here. Play me something.
Play me something from Inside Llewyn Davis.
And there you have it. Tony Scott, having seen it three times already, let's turn away from that sincerity, stay in New York, go to Martin Scorsese's adaptation of New York stockbroker Jordan Belfort's memoir, The Wolf of Wall Street, comes out Christmas Day. Here's a little bit of the trailer featuring Leonardo DiCaprio as Jordan Belfort, Matthew McConaughey, he of the shirtless 10-minute necessity, as Kerry Rickey has it. This is his business mentor in The Wolf of Wall Street.
My name is Jordan Belfort. The year I turned 26, I made $49 million, which really pissed me off because it was three shy of a million a week.
We're making a name for ourselves.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles. You know what a Fugazi is?
Oh, Fugazi. It's a fake.
Yeah, Fugazi, Fugazi. It's a Wazi. It's a Woozy. It's a... Fairy dust.
Fugazi, Fugazi. Are we back, Kerry, in Gordon Gekko territory? What's going on here?
Well, I think it's the cross between Gordon Gekko territory and Goodfellas.
Okay.
Because Jordan
like
Belfort...
Shake him up, shake him down.
Yeah, exactly. Jordan Belfort's story, I think, if memory serves, was previously fictionized in a indie movie called Boiler Room about a decade ago. And these are hustlers. And they make a lot of money, and then they spend a lot of time hiring a lot of lawyers to protect them. I have not seen the movie yet. Have you, Tony?
No, they haven't shown it yet. This has not yet. I think the first screenings of it are next week in time for some of the critics groups to vote.
What's it supposed to be? I mean, we've seen Wall Street, you know, jaundiced, bad, nasty Wall Street so many different ways. There's more. I guess there's always more room for that these days.
My guess is that it's a reaction to the, you know, 2007 and 2008 Wall Street crash and the economic meltdown, and it's kind of a cautionary tale.
Yeah. And, I think also, I mean, Martin Scorsese has always made or has often returned to the theme of groups of men pursuing money, power, pleasure, you know, at war with each other and themselves and the world. And this does, just from the trailers and the teasers, some of which emphasize the more kind of comic madcap aspects of this, but it does feel like Goodfellas or like Casino, like it's a similar kind of story, which is certainly
Crime and Punishment.
Yeah. Okay, we can do that. We've got another hustle and period piece, American Hustle, set in the, 1970s. David O. Russell, writer-director. He did Silver Linings Playbook. Here's from the movie's trailer. Bradley Cooper is the wild FBI agent, Richie DiMaggio.
This is Agent DiMaggio, placing $75,000 in this briefcase for Mayor Carmine Polito.
Everybody thought, oh, Richie DiMaggio's going to stay in the office. I'm outside on the field. I got people working for me. My ideas. I'm running the show. I'm the quarterback, and I'm not going to settle.
Okay, A.O. Scott, we're still in your city here. Not 60s, but 1970s. Ab scam, scandal. What's going on?
I haven't seen it yet. The first screenings of this one were yesterday. Did you see it, Kerry?
No, I see it tomorrow morning.
I'm seeing it next Monday.
I think I'm seeing it next Monday. You're right. I think this has actually happened in New Jersey and Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah, New Jersey. That's right.
It's Abscan.
That's right.
So
Jennifer Lawrence is here, not Hunger Gaming, but she's the wife of Christian Bale.
Bale, Amy Adams. I mean, it's an amazing cast. This is one I really can't wait for.
I'm looking forward to it, too. Yeah. But another feature of these holiday movies are men and astounding facial hair, from Llewyn Davis to American Hustle.
Well, you get in the 60s and 70s, and it kind of sprouts with the territory, I guess.
Yeah. I've never seen such facial hair since the Civil War.
Since the Civil War. And we're only
come
going
to Brooklyn sometime. Yeah. You see
that's true.
Come on.
Very fine. You're right.
Everything old is new again. A.O. Scott, Kerry Rickey, stand by. We've got listeners calling in. Matt in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Matt, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, what are you looking forward to?
All of those movies look terrific, and I'll see all of them. But the one movie that I really am looking forward to is Saving Mr. Banks. When I heard that movie was being made, I put it at the top of the list.
Because of Walt Disney's little cookie duster mustache, or what is it, Matt? Is it facial hair or something else?
The very first movie I ever saw at a theater was Mary Poppins. And I have to tell you, every movie I see has to live up to that experience. Not necessarily that movie, but that whole sense of I'm in this place and I'm enwrapped in music and color and flavor. I just There's nothing that comes close to that, and I hope that Saving Mr. Banks lives up to what I have in terms of expectations, and I'm sure it will. Emma Thompson and Tom Hanks, you know, the Sherman Brothers. I'm just beside myself waiting to see this movie.
Matt, thank you. Carrie, does it have that enraptured quality of Mary Poppins, or it's more really the backstory about
It's both the Disney ethos, the happiest place in the world ethos, and also the P.L. Travers saddest place in the world ethos, kind of meeting each other. And it begins and ends with a very plaintive version of Chim Chim Cheree, which totally made me break down and weep.
Yeah, if you're prone, you're going to go there. Christmas Day, it's August, Osage County. Meryl Streep plays Violet, matriarch of the Weston family, and this is in Oklahoma, a lot of dysfunctions. Yes, her daughter's husband, Bill, played by Ian McGregor, where he's living, since it's apparently not with her daughter, Barbara, played by Julia Roberts. Sisters, played by Julianne Nicholson and Juliette Lewis, chime in. Here's a little bit from August, Osage County.
Bill, where are you living now?
Beg your pardon?
You and Barbara separated, right? Is there a younger woman involved?
Yes.
Well, the odds are against you there, babe.
Mom believes women don't grow more attractive with age.
Oh, I disagree.
And it's not really a matter of opinion, Karen, dear. You've only just started to prove it yourself.
That's pleasant.
Meryl Streep is pill-popping, booze-swilling, cancer patient with a venomous tongue in August, Osage County.
Oh, is she ever.
Boy, you hear her right into her Oklahoma role there. Still always Meryl Streep. Too early to have seen this one? What do we see coming?
I have seen this one. I'm not going to say too much, except that I've always thought that, you know, there should be a parallel Oscars that were based on quantity rather than quality, so you could give awards for most acting, not necessarily best acting, but most. It's just one house in the plains of Oklahoma, and boy, there is a lot of drama in that house, and there is a lot of no chair goes unchewed, no plate goes unsmashed.
Oh, goodness,
it's quite in its way. Quite a tour de force, you might say.
Carrie, do you still? I mean, for years and years, everybody hung on every Meryl Streep, or lots of people, hung, or every outing. Has she still got that standing in your book?
I think she continues to surprise me. I have not seen this. She continues to surprise me in both a good way and a not so good way. But I think she's great. I look forward to seeing it. I don't think that successful Broadway plays tend to make good movies.
Why is that? It's just something.
I mean, we can accept maybe A Streetcar Named Desire.
Yeah.
I don't know. So often, it's like the ground has been tilled too much, and all the secrets have been extracted, or all the minerals have been extracted from the ground. And or the people who are on Broadway seem to know their parts too well, and I feel that way when I watch the movie version of The Philadelphia Story, that, you know, Katharine Hepburn knows the part a little too well.
Carrie Rickey, stand by in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Inquirer there. A.O. Scott, chief film critic for The New York Times. It's great to have both of you with us. We're looking at movies in this holiday season. A little soundtrack from the Coen brothers inside Llewyn Davis behind us right here. This is On Point. We'll be right back. All around this world. So hang me or hang me. Hang me, oh hang me, and I'll be dead and gone. I wouldn't mind the hanging, but the laying in the grave. So long, poor boy, been all around this world. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about movies to see and movies to flee this holiday Hollywood season. Second installment of the Hunger Games trilogy, Catching Fire, out now. Here's a little bit from the film featuring Jennifer Lawrence as Katniss, Joss Hutcherson as Peeta, Woody Harrelson as Haymitch, the only living victor from District 12, and their trainer.
I never meant for anyone to get killed. He has to know that.
What are you talking about? Who has to know what?
Snow. He came to see me.
He's worried about rebellion in the districts. He thinks that they don't believe our love story.
You know, Candace, you should have told me that before I went out there and tried to give these people their money.
I'm sorry, I didn't know what to do.
Candace, what were you thinking?
Please, please just help me get through this trip. Please just help us get through this.
A lot of angst right there. And if that's not enough, how about Hobbit 2, The Desolation of Smaug, second feature film in the Hobbit trilogy, out December 13th. It's a clip from a sneak peek released by Warner Brothers here.
The world is in grave danger. I fear for you.
If this is to end in fire, then we will all burn together.
Hobbit. And then, for something completely different, Black Nativity comes out tomorrow, contemporary version of the Langston Hughes play. Here's Reverend Cornell, played by Forrest Whitaker, meets his grandson, played by Jacob Lattimore, who will be staying with him over the holiday season. A police officer walks him over.
Reverend, I believe this is the young man you were looking for.
You made a mistake. I was told to expect my grandson, not some pickpocket. So anxious to transgress that rather than wait for his grandparents as he was instructed, he'd run off and violate the first law that he could.
I ain't no damn pickpocket. I wasn't lifting that guy's wallet. I was giving it back.
Ooh, boy. It's going to be a long holiday right there. A.L. Scott, chief film critic for the New York Times, is here. Carrie Rickey, film critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Let's go to our listeners. Marie, Centerville, Massachusetts. Marie, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because my students and I read The Hunger Games, the first book, together and watched the film, and they've all been dying not only to see the book but actually see the movie. It's the first time in years that I've had students eager to read a book before they see a movie.
The book that makes them want to see the film, that makes them want to read the book, and round it goes. Let's look at it. Carrie, Tony, have you seen it? And what do you think of the franchise?
Yes, I have seen it. I enjoy seeing a female at the center of a hero story. Jennifer Lawrence is smashing and relatable, and I think it's having a Harry Potter effect on reading, as your caller just suggested to us. It's a different director than the first one, and it seems to move a little faster and be more sure-footed, even as its heroine is more tentative.
Tony Scott, what about Hunger Games? And Jennifer Lawrence, this actress who's coming into her own before us here.
Oscar winner last year. Well, yeah. She's just terrific. I mean, she is both in the way I think that she's handled her celebrity and all of the nonsense that tends to get thrown, especially at young women when they become famous. She's done it with a great deal of grace and humor. And
she's not homogenized out there.
No.
Yet.
And she's a terrific actress. She's a true movie star in the sense that whatever she's doing on screen is what you want to be watching. And this character of Katniss, I completely agree with Carrie. And as the father of a teenage daughter, I feel especially strongly that female heroism is something that's so necessary and so important to have in the popular culture. I think that these books and this movie have really, really done that, and in a way that's very expansive and inclusive. So it's not, I think it's finally breaking down this terrible double standard that's existed, where it's always been assumed that girls would go to see movies about boys. You know, lots of girls went to see the Harry Potter movies, but boys wouldn't go see movies with a female heroine. I think that The Hunger Games has really done a lot to break that down. And I agree too that the second movie is better. It moves better. I also find the story, because it starts to get more into the politics of this dystopian world and the implications of what Katniss is doing and the dilemma that she's going to face as a sort of celebrity, as part of the establishment and the order, and also someone with her own rebellious impulses and sympathies. I think it moves the story along, especially for the second part of a series, which is often kind of a placeholder or a bridge builder. It stands out pretty well on its own.
Hunger Games, Catching Fire. First saw Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone. Talk about deep midwinter and the holidays. If you missed that, go back and catch it. She's extremely young teenager there, I guess, but just terrific. Andy in Westerly, Rhode Island. Andy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to chime in and say I had the most amazing experience watching the new Hunger Games, Catching Fire, with my two daughters, 1'10", 1'15". I sat with my 10-year-old. We ate cheap buttered popcorn and diet soda, and I don't even know what the movie was about. I just watched her watching the movie. It was incredible.
Are your daughters empowered now, Andy?
We are going to take archery lessons.
Oh, fantastic.
Great.
And not only that, my 15-year-old sat 20 rows behind us, of course, with her friends.
Well, of course, freedom. Not only empowered, but soon armed up with archery lessons.
Yeah, but don't let her take the bow and arrows to the movies, okay?
Yeah, not in the theater, please. But thank you for that, Andy. We feel that there's the movie experience. There are laughs out there as well. I don't know what, Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, sequel to the 2004 big hit, reunites the old Channel 4 news crew with the new 24 hours news channel setting. Here's a bit from the trailer. Will Ferrell as Ron Burgundy, Steve Carroll, Brick Tamerlan, Kristen Wiig as the new character, Shani.
We're starting a 24-hour news channel.
I'm going to do the thing that God put Ron Burgundy on this earth to do.
Have salon-quality hair and read the news.
The news team is back!
Is that your foot between my legs?
No.
It was my hand.
Your hair looks like wet popcorn.
I like the parts of your face that are covered with skin.
Okay, that's fine. Another kind of humor here. Medea Christmas. Tyler Perry, out December 13th, is taking a job in a department store as Mrs. Claus.
How you doing, Merry Christmas? What can I get for you?
Does Santa really work in the North Pole?
No, he don't work. He lays on the couch and he drinks all day. He's trifling. I have to pay all the bills. He kind of like your mama. Now, bye.
Okay, Tyler Perry, thank you. Were you too breathless for Anchorman and a Medea Christmas, Carrie? Tony?
I love both of those characters. I have to say, I'm a big Medea fan.
Me too.
I don't know what she's talking about or what she's doing. And the movies often come with very heavy-handed morals and lessons.
They're Victorian.
Notwithstanding that, she is just an amazing comic force. So is Ron Burgundy, although I don't know. That's when I wonder how fresh that will feel after, 11 years?
Yeah.
They're starting CNN, apparently, so
right.
they don't have to just do a 30-minute read. They have
course,
to be on call.
Right,
time.
But how fresh is CNN? I mean, get
no
the hairspray
comment.
Out. Off we go. Kelly, Charlotte, North Carolina. Kelly, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment because I recently saw The Best Man Holiday.
Yes, our critics love it. What do you say, Kelly?
Fantastic movie. And my concern is that African-American movies that are written by African-American writers or have a majority African-American cast are shoved into a category of urban African-American movies, and they're not seen as movies alone, just standalone movies. And I was a little bit disappointed. I love your reviewers, but you stumbled over the African-American movies just like, oh, you know, maybe this is not our area. And honestly, I think it speaks to the need to have more color behind the camera.
I couldn't agree with you more, Kelly.
And reviewers.
Yeah, Kelly, I hear you loud and clear. I mean, I don't think that these sit in a category of movies that will be seen by African-American viewers full stop by any means these days.
Can I just tell you, I saw Best Man Holiday with an audience in Philadelphia last weekend, and it was, I would say, 50-50 African-American Caucasian there. Everyone loves these characters. I just think, you know, Terrence Howard was a hoot as the epitome of debauchery, and everyone was laughing, and everyone felt great walking out.
Tony, what do you say to Kelly's lament?
I think that there is a problem, and I think that it goes to it. It is partly a problem in the entertainment press among journalism, and also a problem among the studios and the distributors is that every few years, it seems to come to as a big surprise when movies like Best Man Holiday or earlier this year, Lee Daniels, The Butler, do really well, become big hits, cross over, not just to reaching African-American audiences, but a broader audience. And this happened with the Barbershop movies. It happened with the first... I mean, Tyler Perry couldn't get any studio to make the movies that he wanted to make out of his very popular plays. And as soon as he did, and they started making hundreds of millions of dollars, the studios were kind of stunned and astonished. And I think you see the same thing. What frustrates me is that we never get to the point where it just becomes... normal, where the movies come out and are assessed, and there's a great variety of them. There's this kind of amnesia, you know, that somehow makes it always a startling discovery that movies with African American casts and directors and writers can reach an audience and can make money. And yeah. I think that's a problem in Hollywood and in the media generally. With what is paid attention to.
I mean, maybe,
and it's
but
not
I don't
only
see
African Americans, but yeah. it's movies with women too.
Yeah,
and I agree with Kelly.
I don't see that point as endlessly receding, though. I mean, it seems like fairly standard, fair in a good way to me these days. Spike Lee's back. He's got Old Boy, opens tomorrow. Joe Doucette, played by Josh Brolin. What a businessman, mysteriously abducted, housed in a motel room prison for 20 years. When he's set free, he meets Marie Sebastian, played by Elizabeth Olsen. Spike Lee's film, Old Boy.
What if I thought you knew too much, huh? Reading my letters. What if I felt like I needed to kill you right now?
Then I suppose I'd be dead. Joe, please take your hands off me.
Spike Lee, outside of any kind of racial mode here, what's this film about, Tony?
This is a remake of a Korean, South Korean film that came out in this country, I think, in 2005, also called Old Boy, directed by Park Chung-wook, who is a sort of a cult figure who has some things in common with Quentin Tarantino, and then he makes very... violent, intense genre movies. This is about revenge and about this guy trying to find out who locked him away for 20 years and why. So Spike Lee has done a fairly faithful. I mean, it departs from the original in some ways, but it does stay kind of close to the original movie, which. Always for me is a little puzzling with remakes because there's always a challenge of making it a kind of standalone and transcend any comparisons to the original.
But it goes to this theme I think you've seen out there. A lot of us have of survival that's been already in the theaters this fall with Captain Phillips and 12 Years a Slave and now with Old Boy as well, Tony.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, one thread that we seem to see throughout the movies in the second part of this year has been characters undergoing these intense ordeals. That Sandra Bullock in Gravity, you know, lost
Robert
in space.
Redford and All
Robert
is Lost.
Redford
yes,
on his
course.
Boat
yeah.
in All Is Lost and I think that that Old Boy fits that one too. Although it's a much busier and more conventionally action driven movie than some of those others.
Kerry, what have we missed here? If people are making their list and checking it twice for the holiday season movies, what have we missed?
We haven't talked about Frozen, which is a really nice animated movie, family feature.
Disney, yeah.
Written and co-directed by Jennifer Lee, who did Wreck-It Ralph. And I encourage people to see it with their kids.
This is off the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale, The Snow Queen.
Exactly. I really enjoyed Black Nativity, and interestingly, both the Best Man Holiday and Black Nativity end with the great Stevie Wonder song, As. So you walk out of the theater just really bouncing.
Yeah, that's a good way to go. Tony Scott, what else that we didn't mention off of your interest list?
There's a couple years ago, a movie won the the best foreign language film Oscar called The Separation. That was an Iranian movie.
Yeah.
And that director, his follow-up to that is called The Past, and it opens around Christmas time. And it takes place in Paris, and it's similar to Separation in that it's a family story about a family perhaps breaking apart. A man comes back from Tehran to see his ex-wife in Paris. She's with a new man who she wants to marry, and it really kind of digs into the relationships in this unusual extended family, and has a kind of emotional weight and dramatic intensity that people who liked The Separation, which was quite a popular film,
yes,
for
it
a foreign language film, it's definitely worth checking out. Berenice Bejo, who is in The Artist, is the female lead in this, and she's just terrific.
Well, with everything in the headlines, maybe a little Iranian sensibility, good idea to check out.
Yes.
just about now.
Interest of peace.
Yes, try and figure out the world. How terrific to have the two of you with us to get us set for this season. So good of you. Carrie Rickey with the Philadelphia Inquirer. We always love having you. Thank you so much for coming on, and good holidays, Carrie.
Thank you, and thanks, Tony.
Tony Scott, A.O. Scott of the New York Times, our great big thanks to you as well. Enjoy the season. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Great talking with both of you.
Wonderful to have everybody right there. Listeners, thanks for joining us. Good viewing when you get there. We'll go out with just a little bit more from the best man holiday Christmas time to me, Jordan Sparks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.